singing. We're a part of it. Ready? They dance just like ducks. Is the basis of what we're interested in, what we're talking about, and it's at the crux of a lot of the misunderstandings and misconceptions that exist in the world today among peoples and across the racial lines. Misconceptions that exist because of cultural differences. Now, I'm not talking essentially about differences that exist on the outside because a person looks different or because he acts different, but because a person believes differently, that inside, intrinsically, he has a heritage, a cultural root.
The preceding has been Dr. Lewis Ballard at the Head Start ICAP Training Seminar, April 10th, 1970, University of New Mexico. The following is Dr. Lewis Ballard at the ICAP Head Start Training Seminar, April 10th, 1970, University of New Mexico.
This is our Czechoslovakian composer, Anton Dvorak, who wrote the New World Symphony, he made the statement that America needs and should have an indigenous form of music, and this form of music should be based rightly upon our American Indian music. And he went on to say that American music has predominantly the pentatonic scale, which is a five-note scale, the black keys of your keyboard, for instance. But the composers who came after this, before the First World War, there was a great wave of interest in American Indian lore, American Indian drama, and presentation of the American Indian as American, the American form of entertainment, the form of expression coming from this continent. But unfortunately, the composers and the musicians who propagated the Indian music at that time were following a false premise in assuming that all Indian music was alike, and that all Indian music was based upon this five-tone scale. And hence we have much of our Hollywood stereotype and cliches in music. And these stereotypes still persist today. I think you hear this particular melody. It's now a Hamm's beer commercial. This thing goes on and on. And supposedly this is Indian music, and it's based upon this pentatonic scale. But this is not true, because there are over 200 different tribes of Indians in the continental United States alone. And in each of these tribes, there are as many as 500 different songs. So we have an enormity of music that comes from our native peoples and our Native American people. And I myself, as a composer, recognize the enormity of this task. And the various songs that I have encountered from Alaska all the way to Florida, to New York, to here in New Mexico and Arizona, in the different tribes. You have lullabies, you have war dance songs, you have epic poetry represented in the music. You have meaningful songs as well as non-meaningful songs. But in each case, Indian music is functional. Generally, it's vocal music. The instrumental music has not developed into violins and horns and brass instruments. But of course, today our young Indian people, our youngsters are playing guitars and violins. But you'll notice that the literature that they play, the rock and roll music, is not derived from Indian music. And it seems that of all the elements of American Indian culture, his language and his music have remained uninfluenced and unadulterated, with very few exceptions. Now this rapid dance song, we'll find a few English words in the song. There are also some moonlight songs and Taos that have English words there. And the Plains Indians, the Kiowas, Comanche, Cheyennes, Arapahoes, the Round Dance songs and the 49 songs have English words, but they're used in a humorous fashion. There are a few cases in which some other words have crept into the music. The Hopi Indians of Arizona have one song which is an entrance song to the buffalo dance ceremony, and it utilizes Japanese words. And this is a curious thing. It seems that a young Hopi soldier was stationed in Japan in the Second World War and learned the words to this song, Chinese Night, which is a Japanese song extolling the virtues of this Chinese girl. And this song is used in the buffalo dance in Hopi land. And there have been many, many attempts to write down Indian music, to put it into notation. And fortunately, our Indian music has not been frozen or codified yet in the same sense that our folk songs of Tennessee and some of our Slovakian songs that we have. It still remains an oral transmission song passed on ear to mouth, mouth to ear, learning and passing on from generation to generation. And so that many of our songs, we don't know exactly how old they are. This duck dance song may be 1,000 years old, it may be 500 years old, it may be only 10 years old. We don't know. Some of our Indian musicians are composers, but not in the sense of writing the music down. They compose music for the feast days here in the pueblos, just as they do in the war dances of Oklahoma, North Dakota, Nebraska, Montana, and Washington, Oregon. The songs are made up by these prominent musicians. In the article here, I go on to explain that Indian music, being functional, has many vocables which have no meaning. The instrumental development is in a primitive stage. There are no sophisticated violins in the sense of European violin. The Apache medicine man used a one and two string violin in his curing ceremonies, but other than that, there are no violins in the music literature of the American Indian. Be careful of some of the things that are on the market. For instance, here, the Ghost Dance, Song of the Ghost Dance. This is sold by Rapid City Sioux Museum. And you'll see the irony of this when I explain it. It says Ghost Dance, Iwahuni, music by Short Bull. And a picture of Short Bull, explanation of the Ghost Dance in it. And it looks informative. But when you play the music, then again it starts sounding like the Hams beer commercial. It's this Hollywood version of Indian music. So here's a misconception. Here's a stereotype which is misleading people of the world insofar as our music is concerned. And if that weren't bad enough, on the cover it says, in memory of his unprecedented success in dealing with the crafty, savage foeman of the frontier, we respectfully dedicate Iwahuni to the greatest living soldier of our country, Major General Nelson A. Miles, who probably shot more Indians than George Armstrong Custer. And here they dedicate this song to him, you know? Well, this should not even be on the market, but unfortunately it is. They'll take it off when they hear about me saying what I'm saying. The source. Go back to the source. Go back to the Indian people themselves in your community. Go back to the singers. Go back to the women who know the songs. Revive them. Use them in the classroom. Be careful about using ceremonial songs. There are certain songs which should not be used. There are certain Yebiche songs which should not be sung in a certain part of the year. You'll have to be careful about these things. But all you have to do is ask, inquire, be curious. And your classroom can be alive, can be an exciting place with many different things. There are many records available right here at Reeling Music Company, Mays Music Company. Plains Indian songs on records, Honk Indian songs. I learned a great many of the songs I know from the recording of Nate, the Navajo singer. And these songs are available that you can use in your classroom. It's not easy to learn Indian music to sing in your classroom. It takes a great deal of effort, and it's, like I say, an oral tradition, and there are no written song sheets to buy to a Santa Ana bow and arrow dance, that you can go down to the music store and buy a song sheet to Akama Rain Song, and then you go play it on the piano, and then you have Indian music in your classroom. It doesn't work this way, because The Indian has not proselytized his music or profiteered from his music. It's a oral tradition that belongs with the people. And it's alive and it's dynamic and it's a rich and interesting part. I want to close by singing this particular Hopi song with the Japanese words. I think you'll find it interesting. Oh, yo, ene, ya, si.